The Dominican Republic is the most visited island in the Caribbean, yet most travelers never realize they're standing on the bloodied ground of the first European colony in the Americas, where colonial conquest, slave rebellions, and indigenous extinction collided in violent, beautiful, and often misunderstood ways. From the rhythmic pulse of bachata in Santiago to the spiritual undercurrents of brujería and espiritismo, the island's heartbeat is made up of resistance disguised as culture. You can taste it in the smoky lechon asado, spinning over open fire in the campos. You can see it in the way Afro-Dominican identity still fights for space in a country deeply entangled with its Spanish past. And you can feel it undeniably in the energy of carnival, where masks, music, and mythology dance in a ritual older than the Republic itself. This isn't a tourist brochure. This is a deep dive into the soul of a land forged in contradiction, African yet Spanish, Catholic yet animist, festive yet defiant. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Salt, Sugar, and Survival. A History Carved into the Land. To understand the Dominican Republic, you have to forget the glossy beach resort ads. You must walk backward, barefoot, through the thick vines of history, until you hit the hard stone of Hispaniola, the first island Columbus discovered in 1492. But long before the Spanish planted their flags, this land was alive with Taino people, complex trade systems, agricultural terraces, and spiritual belief systems tied deeply to the earth and sky. The Taino legacy that refused to die. The Taino were more than just noble savages, as European myths described them. They were engineers of conucos, spiral farming systems, worshippers of Zemis, ancestral spirits housed in carved stones, and diplomats who welcomed, then resisted, their invaders. By the early 1500s, Spanish colonists had enslaved, infected, and exterminated nearly 90% of the Taino population. Yet to say the Taino vanished is colonial propaganda. Taino words like barbacoa, barbecue, hammock, and tobacco live on. So do genetic traces in rural Dominicans, particularly women. So does the reverence for nature, community, and spiritual balance that still echoes in folk beliefs across the island. Today, in pockets of the countryside, old women still make offerings to rivers. Children play games whose chants echo Taino cadences, and in altars hidden from the Catholic gaze, Zemis reappear, reinterpreted through the lens of Catholic saints and African spirits. A Spanish colony built on blood and cane. The capital, Santo Domingo, isn't just the oldest European city in the Americas. It's ground zero for the transatlantic slave trade in the New World. Sugar, the white gold of empire, was the reason. As Taino resistance and disease reduced the native labor pool, Spanish colonists began importing enslaved Africans by the thousands. The fields of San Cristobal and La Vega whispered with the agony of forced labor. Sugar mills, called ingenios, popped up across the land. They weren't just industrial centers, they were hellscapes. Enslaved Africans worked from dawn till collapse. If they rebelled, and many did, they faced mutilation or death. But resistance became culture. African drums were banned, so enslaved people encoded rhythms into foot stomps and body percussion. Spanish banned native languages, so songs became memory banks. Out of this soil, genres like palo, gaga, and later merengue were born, all expressions of African endurance. Even food became a quiet rebellion. Dishes like mangu, mashed plantains with onions, mirrored West African fufu. guandulis, pigeon peas, thrived where wheat failed. The colonizers' cuisine failed to adapt, but the enslaved survived by turning scraps into sustenance and ritual. Haitian rule, Dominican rebirth, and an ongoing identity crisis. By the 1800s, Spain had ceded parts of the island to France, then reclaimed it, then lost it again. The western third, now Haiti, staged the only successful slave revolt in modern history. In 1822, Haiti ruled the entire island for 22 years. This period remains a national wound in the Dominican psyche. While Haitians abolished slavery and promoted black empowerment, many Dominicans, especially elites of mixed Spanish heritage, saw Haitian rule as a threat to their cultural autonomy. They wanted Catholicism, Spanish, and European identity. The Dominican Republic gained independence not from Spain, but from Haiti in 1844, and ever since, its national identity has been shaped by this contrast. We are not them. This racial and cultural tension still simmers, feeding colorism, anti-blackness, and immigration debates. Yet the border is porous, especially in the mountains. In border towns like Dajabon, markets buzz with Creole and Spanish, Dominican cheese and Haitian art, plantains stacked like gold on both sides. Cultures blend despite political divisions. Many Dominicans have Haitian grandmothers, even if they won't say it out loud. Spiritual resistance, Catholic crosses and African shadows. Walk into a Dominican church and you'll see images of the Virgin Mary and Jesus. Yes, but you might also see candles flickering for Lama Dharma, a black spirit guide. You might notice a woman praying, but when she leaves, a bruja, spiritual worker, enters to sweep the floor counterclockwise. This is the duality of Dominican spirituality, officially Catholic, unofficially plural. Religions like Espiritismo, 21 Divisiones, and Vodou all coexist with traditional Catholicism. Many practitioners hide their altars, but they're everywhere, in beauty salons, taxi driver dashboards, back rooms of grocery stores. Saints serve as masks for African loas, spirits. A statue of St. Michael might actually be Belie-Belkan, a warrior spirit from the Congo. A child's fever might be treated with holy water, or herbs whispered over in Congo dialect. Dominican spirituality is not superstition, it's survival. In a country rocked by colonization, enslavement, dictatorship, and migration, belief systems weren't abandoned. They evolved. They became codes of endurance, languages of liberation. Chapter 2, Carnival, Cuisine, and the Rhythm of Resistance, where culture dances in the streets. If Chapter 1 was about the scars of history, then Chapter 2 is about how Dominicans turned those scars into celebration. Because here, culture is not preserved in museums. It lives in the streets, in the kitchen, in the hips of dancers, and in the rebellious pulse of carnival masks that mock colonizers with every sway. Carnival, the weaponized smile. Every February, the Dominican Republic explodes into color. In cities like El Ajo, Vega, Santiago, and Santo Domingo, carnival parades are more than spectacle. They are rituals of resistance. At first glance, it's all fun. Music, confetti, outrageous costumes. But look closer. The central figure of Dominican carnival is Diablo Cojuelo, the limping devil. He wears a grotesque mask, painted in clashing neon, with horns sprouting from his head and a cracked whip in his hand. He skips through crowds, playfully hitting onlookers with vejigas, inflated animal bladders. It's silly, it's hilarious, but it's also deeply political. Diablo Cojuelo's origins trace back to colonial mockery. Enslaved Africans and oppressed Taínos were forbidden from celebrating their own traditions. so they used the colonizer's own Catholic carnival against him. They dressed as devils and danced through the streets, using irony as a shield. Over time, these devils became beloved symbols of Dominican identity, mischievous, flamboyant, irreverent, a nation laughing through pain. The Vejiga, for example, was once a slave's tool of punishment. During Carnival, it's repurposed, not to wound, but to remind. Every slap is a whisper. We remember. Kitchener's archive. Memory served. Hot food in the Dominican Republic is more than flavor. It's encoded memory. Recipes are oral history, passed from abuela to mother to daughter, sometimes never written down. Every bite tells a story of survival, adaptation, and quiet defiance. Take sancocho, the national stew. It's not just a meal. It's a layered timeline. Spanish colonialists brought garlic, onions, and meat. Africans introduced plantains, yams, and cooking techniques. Indigenous Tainos supplied root vegetables like cassava. Sancocho simmers all these lineages into one pot, as if the entire nation boiled down into something you can taste. Or mangu, mashed green plantains served with fried cheese, eggs, and salami frito. It comes from West African traditions, but it's also a meal of the campo, of laborers who needed to eat heavy and early before heading into sugar fields. The addition of fried cheese and meat tells a story of adaptation in a poverty-ridden economy, comfort through scarcity. Even pastelón, a lasagna-like plantain dish layered with ground meat, is a kind of culinary resistance. It mimics European sophistication, but uses ingredients native to the Caribbean, its pride in disguise. And in every home, you'll find habichuelas guisadas, stewed beans made not just with love, but with lore. Don't stir the pot too fast, an elder might warn, or the spirits get restless. Cooking here is not transactional, it's ritual. The music that refused to die. If Carnival is the body of Dominican resistance, music is its voice, and no genre carries more cultural weight than merengue and bachata. Merengue, the rhythm of the masses. Merengue was born in the sugarcane fields. Its roots are African, its soul rural, and its early reputation rebellious. In the 1800s, elite Dominicans looked down on merengue as music of the lower class, too vulgar, too noisy, too black. Dictator Rafael Trujillo changed that for his own purposes. He sanitized merengue, filled its lyrics with patriotic propaganda, and promoted it as national identity. But even state control couldn't strip it of its original spirit. The tambora, drum, still spoke encoded rhythms. The accordion still wept for the poor. And in village festivals, merengue became the soundtrack of joy and dissent. Today, bands like Juan Luis Guerra's 440 have brought merengue into global consciousness, blending social critique with irresistible dance beats. In his song El Niagara en Bicicleta, Guerra sings about broken hospitals and poverty, but people dance anyway. That's the Dominican way. Protest in motion. Bachata. From brothel to billboard. Bachata, once considered the music of prostitutes and thieves, has perhaps the most dramatic redemption arc of all. Born in the bars and brothels of Santo Domingo's marginalized neighborhoods, it spoke to heartbreak, betrayal, and longing. For decades, mainstream society rejected it. Radio stations refused to play it. Record labels mocked it. But the people loved it, and they made it unstoppable. By the 1990s, artists like Anthony Santos and Luis Vargas brought bachata out of the shadows. Then came Aventura and Romeo Santos, blending traditional sounds with R&B and reggaeton influences. Suddenly, bachata was global. What was once shameful became a source of pride. It's the perfect metaphor for the Dominican Republic itself, misunderstood, underestimated, and yet utterly magnetic, stories passed in shadows, oral tradition, and hidden histories. In rural towns, stories are currency, not stories from books, but oral narratives passed over domino tables, shared at wakes, whispered during storms. These tales keep history alive in ways textbooks never could. You'll hear about Latiguapa, a seductive mountain spirit with backward feet who lures men to their doom, a Taino legend kept alive in ghost stories. You'll learn about El Cuco, a colonial-era boogeyman used to terrify children into obedience, later reclaimed as a joke, a way of laughing at the fears imposed by authority. And there are real stories, too, about the 1937 Parsley Massacre, where Trujillo ordered the slaughter of thousands of Haitians near the border. Few Dominicans learned this in school. But in the Campos, elders still whisper the truth, how soldiers made people say the Spanish word perejil, parsley, to identify Haitian Creole speakers. If you said it wrong, you were dead. That's how Dominican culture works. What the state forgets, the people remember. What's silenced in public becomes song, joke, or story in private. Resistance wears lipstick too, gender and power in Dominican society. Dominican women are central to cultural survival. They are the keepers of recipes, the spiritual mediators, the educators, even when schools fail. But they're also rebels in their own right. In cities, women navigate catcalls and machismo with sharp tongues and sharper instincts. In towns, they lead local economies through informal trade, often managing households alone while men migrate to the US or Puerto Rico for work. And in the most famous act of resistance in Dominican history, it was women who led the charge. The Mirabal sisters, Patria, Minerva, and Maria Teresa, opposed Trujillo's dictatorship with fierce defiance. They were arrested, beaten, and eventually assassinated in 1960. But their deaths became a rallying cry, sparking the beginning of the end for the regime. Today, November 25th, the date of their murder, is recognized by the United Nations as the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. In Dominican culture, femininity is power wrapped in grace. A woman might wear stilettos and lipstick and still carry centuries of resistance in her stride. The diaspora. Culture in motion. You can't talk about Dominican identity without talking about migration. Over 2 million Dominicans live in the United States, especially in New York, Miami, and Boston. These communities have created a cultural feedback loop where Dominican culture isn't exported, it's extended. Dominican bodegas in the Bronx sell Moro de Guandules alongside American lottery tickets. In Washington Heights, bachata blares from barbershops next to subway stations. Dominicans abroad send money home, but they also send ideas, music, and style. And when they return, even briefly, they carry new versions of themselves. They become bridges between islands and continents. They prove that Dominican culture isn't static. It travels, it evolves, it survives.